Good evening. It is wow, it's getting late. It's almost towards midnight in Seattle, little Saigon, and it's your, well, I mean, call me friend, call me dude. It's your dude here talking about the little Saigon report and my topic, and I'm going to try to stick to, I know I sometimes cover too many topics in a report. And I'm going to work on that, but I'm going to try to stick to one report, one topic per report from now on. And today's topic is going to be focused mainly on free speech. But free speech has a lot of connections, so it's a powerful topic. It's powerful because free speech, in many ways, in terms of American history, but even deeper, in terms of the history of sort of Anglo-Saxon, excuse me, Anglo-Saxon political structures. You know, a lot of our values come from British common law, or at least if you see it that way, or at least if you still understand it, they do. Now, full disclosure, if you follow me, you know that I'm basically an anarchist. And I don't want to talk about the crocodile. I don't want to talk about that. I actually have a podcast about the crocodile coming up. But yeah, I'm an anarchist, but I choose to, for the most part, try to obey the law to the extent that I can, because I simply don't want to end up in jail. It isn't because I think it's right. But anyways, so as far as our history goes, we do have this kind of free speech culture that goes back to common law. It's not perfect. The history of censorship in England is a powerful history. You know, Parliament has, you know, Parliament proved itself capable. You know, certainly in modern times, proved itself capable in England of trampling on people's free speech. So yeah, there is a history of common law that we have, but it also becomes parallel once the United States of America becomes a thing. And just so you know, if we could have stuck to the Declaration of Independence and never created a constitution, just stuck to the principles in the Declaration of Independence and the Articles of Confederation, I think this would have been a better country. But that's a whole nother topic too. A lot of people love that musical Hamilton. A lot of people love that Constitution. I mean, the fact is, the Constitution is like IKEA furniture. It is, you know, I have a friend that has an IKEA bed, and I visit this friend every once in a while. And over the years, the IKEA bed, it's like, well, I'll drill here, or I'll nail here, I'll take a saw and cut here. It's this monstrous, monstrous thing. It's become almost a Torquemada, you know, Spanish Inquisition style torture device. And one time I visited this friend and I fell through the bed and it kind of closed in on me. Though I do have a couple incidents of that hell happening in my life. That's how old I am and or how unlucky. But I've had more than one incident in my life of beds malfunctioning, which is really disconcerting if you're asleep. Like I said, the topic of free speech connects, but the thing is, the US Constitution is a lot like a piece of IKEA furniture. At first, you say, wow, this is really functional, and it was, and this is really simple, and it didn't cost us so much, you know? And at first, the United States federal government was mostly just an annoyance at first, although it didn't take more than one or two decades for there to become an army. And then basically, once we had an army, the first thing the army started doing was killing Native Americans. That's basically it. If you want to know the history of the U.S. Army, in the early to, you know, really the early to mid 19th century before the Civil War, it's a history of basically, yeah, there's some discovery and yeah, there's positive things, I think, but it's also a history of rounding up Native Americans and stealing their land. So, yeah, at first, IKEA furniture, it seems really awesome, but then you drill into it and you say, no, we need a national bank, and why don't we have an army to kill Indians? And holy shit, this Constitution allows us to do so much shit. And the problem is, the Constitution seems written in such a way that a judge will tell you it allows you to undo the Bill of Rights. So it's like people will say, well, oh my God, Dan, we have the Bill of Rights. We have the First Amendment. We have the First Amendment, you know? We have this thing called the Bill of Rights, Dan. and it protects your civil liberties. But I gotta say, I don't think it's working. I think it's broken. I think that the Constitution and in general all social contracts have really, not always. Okay, maybe there is more of a conspiracy, but let's pretend. Let's go to pretend land and assume that the agenda of the framers of the Constitution was positive. Even if that's so, it is exactly like that piece of IKEA furniture at this point. It is what Lysander Spooner said. It either allowed the government we have or failed to prevent it. And which do you prefer? That's the question I have, is which do you prefer? Was the Constitution so badly written that it would inevitably lead to a tyranny? Or was the Constitution so badly written that it would fail to prevent a tyranny? I mean, that's the thing that I don't think most Americans want to think about. So when it comes to free speech, I'm a bit of a radical. Now, I do have limits. If I don't believe, I mean, number one, as an anarchist, if we lived in my ideal world, you're not going to have a police force to, go around arresting people, okay? It's not going to happen. Yeah, communities might form to self-police voluntarily. And yeah, I think that would be right. I mean, I think voluntary policing and where people participate to keep their community safe, that makes a lot of sense. But the key word is voluntary. The key word is voluntary, and another good key word is cooperation. But the point is, in that world, I think things would operate differently. But even in that world, there are things I think are reprehensible. Abuse of children is reprehensible, okay? Murdering and raping and stealing people's shit is reprehensible. I think if you give speeches or publish videos or create some form of art that makes these things seem cool, I don't believe you should be censored, but I do think communities will probably shun you. I mean, that's the thing. I think that there's a natural response to things that are truly bad. It's called shunning. People get shunned. People just say, you know what? We've had enough of you. Also, some people call it ostracism, but in ancient Greece, I think to be ostracized was a little bit more severe. But yeah, people should be shunned. People should be, in the modern sense, ostracized if they support the victimization of other people on any scale, okay? But by the same token, when it comes to just speech that annoys you or offends you, oh, you don't like dirty words? Well, listen, here's the deal with free speech. If you can walk away, if you can turn off the radio, turn off the TV, go to another web page, if you have the ability to extricate yourself from that speech, then it's not harming you. It's just something that's happening. And stuff happens. You know, I used to... A long time ago, I was an atheist, and I used to walk around and I would hear street preachers, and some people get, offended. Like, I've known atheists who get kind of offended by any sort of religious affectation, but I was just entertained. I mean, from my perspective, it was like, holy crap, this person's really passionate. This person's really expressing an idea. They're really passionate. I don't know if I agree with it, but there is a certain kind of, I don't even know how to phrase this exactly. There's a certain kind of intrinsic, subtle, maybe even sublime beauty to a human being passionately expressing something, even if what they're expressing is quite terrible. Now, I am sure that people get offended by that kind of speech. And I might have to pause here for a second because my throat's kind of dry. Hold on. Okay. I got some water. And I paused the recording there for a second. So if you feel like there was a time warp or a time slip, it wasn't the Mandela effect. It was just the pause button on my Tascam audio recorder. And yeah, I should talk about that Mandela effect at some point. I got some real mixed feelings about that. Don't really want to go into them right now. Anyways, but yeah, I used to know a lot of atheists who, if they heard a street preacher, they would get offended. And I didn't. It was like, holy crap, Why was that? Well, I think I kind of appreciated the passion. I think that if you don't like what somebody's saying, if it offends you, then yeah, you should walk away. And listen, I don't think it's cool to be a racist. I don't think it's cool to beat up on women because they're women or men because they're men. I don't think it's cool to use features of people's bodies as a point of ridicule. On the other hand, it's the real world and people are going to say shit. And in life, people will say things that bother you. In other podcasts and in multiple times in my life, I've told people this. And it's especially true in Seattle. I cannot be awake for 5 minutes in Seattle without being offended. There's tons of shit around here that pisses me off. This is one of the most ridiculous cities I've ever been to, and I grew up in Washington State, and I am convinced Seattle didn't start out this way. You know, if we want to go down that Mandela effect road, there used to be a really cool Seattle. It was a really cool place. It wasn't just filled with douches and this general kind of social dismay. So something happened. Maybe it was swapped out. Maybe a time traveler, that John Teeter dude that was always on Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell. Maybe John Teeter, you know, warped back to like, I don't actually. Yeah. What if John Teeter murdered Kurt Cobain? Because maybe there was a reality where Kurt Cobain didn't die. And then Seattle did not become so fucking douchey. Wow. That's a side topic. But yeah, I should talk about the Mandela effect. But yeah, free speech is about allowing people, street preachers, even crazy people. Like, okay, here's a thought experiment. But imagine a free society where someone like Adolf Hitler could just give crazy free speeches on the corner of the street someplace. Yeah, he would probably say some pretty nasty shit. And he would say some very anti-Semitic shit, probably. But at some point, he would probably just be entertaining people, and he might. And here's the thing. Adolf Hitler in a free world might have ended up just being like Morton Downey Jr. I don't know if you guys remember Morton Downey Jr. I was a freshman at the University of Washington with my little black and white TV in my dorm room. And late at night when I was studying as a freshman at the UW at the morgue, the quiet dorm, I would turn on my little black and white TV and I would tune in to the local channel and I would watch Morton Downey Jr. And yeah, he was terrible. And he would have on guests like the radical Nazi, and then he would have on a Jewish person. And like, you know, putting crabs in a bucket and kicking it, he would get people riled up and they would act crazy. And it was ridiculous. And maybe, yeah, it probably offended a lot of people. But the people that were offended to the point that they didn't want to watch, they could just turn it off. They could walk away. They don't have to listen. Okay? I don't believe in a world where you must listen to me. If you're listening to a podcast of mine and you hate it, frankly, don't leave an asshole comment, because I will be honest with you. If you leave an asshole comment, I'll probably just respond like an asshole. But if you want to just leave a comment saying something normal, like, you know, I don't agree with you and here are the reasons, I'll probably just say that's okay, right? And or maybe even not respond, but just stop listening. My point is, you don't even have to leave a comment. If you don't like what I say, don't listen. I'm not forcing people to. You know, if you click on a link, I'm not forcing you to do that. If you hear something and you don't know how to turn off the volume, I'm not forcing you to do that. I wouldn't want to live in a world where anybody was forced to listen to anybody else. I mean, can you imagine a world where you were forced to listen to the bleeding of a French bulldog? I mean, if you know what I mean by that, if you've ever heard a French bulldog bleeding its little bleat, nobody wants to live in that world. Okay, so nobody wants to have to listen to Hitler if they don't want to listen to Hitler. But wouldn't you prefer Hitler being like Morton Downey Jr.? Wouldn't you prefer him being on late night TV on some shitty public access channel talking crazy ass shit? And honestly, if you're drunk, might be funny to listen to and laugh at, because it is a self-parody. Wouldn't you prefer Hitler doing that? I mean, one of the reasons why I love the original Mel Brooks producers, and I kind of think the reincarnation was kind of snotty and missed the point. But I love the original Mel Brooks producers because it was about a kind of a deep message. When it comes to scary, tyrannical bullshit artists, the best strategy, one of the best strategies you can have is laugh at them. Okay? And the funny thing is, Hitler may have become a person who would say, shit, I can make money saying crazy ass shit, and I can have a supermodel wife, and I can have a fancy car because I can pay for it with money I've made, you know? And so Hitler in a free world, the worst case scenario is he would have ended up like Morton Downey Jr. He might have had a little bit of a following. Excuse me, my throat's a little bit, yeah. Yeah, in the worst case scenario in the free world, Hitler would be on some TV station late at night. Best case scenario, he'd be on at 1 a.m., you know. But he might make an okay living. He might have a beautiful wife, you know, and a beautiful car. But that's really the worst case scenario, is that he has a filthy show saying filthy shit and has on filthy, nasty guests who are really angry and really sad. And like the Mel Brooks producers, is a parody. It may not be on purpose, but here's the thing. Art and reality, these things often merge in the strangest ways. And if Hitler had been reduced to a bullshit artist instead of a mass murderer, if Joseph Stalin had been reduced to a bullshit artist instead of a mass murderer, if Pol Pot merely had the Pol Pot cooking show, I mean, the Pol Pot cooking show is way preferable to the Pol Pot killing fields. I mean, if we're measuring heavy, you know, how heavy something is, one thing is heavier than the other, okay? Yeah, free speech can scare you, and there's forms of free speech I do not approve of. I don't think it's okay, in my opinion, to make a movie. In my opinion, it's not okay to make a movie where the entire purpose is to show people getting killed, whether it's real or not. Now, I'm not going to forbid it. If it's fiction, I'd never forbid it. And just, you know, full disclosure, I love horror films. I'm not against slasher films, but in a way, I draw the line there because if a proper slasher film is also kind of a parody. It's not, you have to kind of see the humor in it. It's almost hard to make fun of a slasher film because in general, they tend to be parodies. I will say one exception in my opinion, and that's the original, like 1976 or 78 or something. But in the 70s, the original Halloween, the first movie, John Carpenter's Halloween, that film, I think, actually had an interesting and deeper message and was quite scary. And I think it was artistic. But for the most part, slasher films are these really clumsy, really terrible morality plays. Even Get Out, like I love Get Out, and it's not technically a slasher film, but it's a horror film. But Get Out was a great horror film. Yeah, it kind of played on the whole white versus black and evil white people. I don't want to get obsessed about that, but the film itself was awesome. But if you're going to make a movie that just shows people getting killed, like I remember watching Hostel, and Hostel, I know. Here's the thing. I think the original Hostel was an interesting film, just like I would say Midnight Express. Midnight Express is an interesting film. Neither one might be related to reality. It's hard to know. I mean, I remember people saying Oliver Stone had to, you know, somehow he apologized to the Turkish government or something about Midnight Express. But if you've never seen Midnight Express, but you've seen the movie Airplane, where the captain is asking the kid, you know, or I think, yeah, have you ever spent time in a Turkish prison or something? I think somebody said something like that. Have you ever spent time in a Turkish prison? Yeah, so that's a reference to Midnight Express in the movie Airplane. What the fuck? So no, when I saw the first Hostel, and I think this was 2005. I was a little bit chilled, but at the same time, it's still just free speech. If I don't like it, I can turn it off. And I didn't totally hate the movie. It's just that there was that line. I feel like there's a line for me. If you're artistically displaying the victimization of people in a way that makes it almost look, in a way that almost makes it look like a commercial for fast food, which means, you know, appealing to features of the human being that are, you know, prurient and, you know, mangled and often deformed and dark and evil. If you're just doing it for that purpose, I'm not going to keep you from doing it. But yeah, you probably should be shunned. But worse than that, if you're showing, if you have pictures, if you have movies of real victimization, of real harm being done to people and their and children, you're a monster. And in a free world, one of the outcomes of being a monster is a series of shallow graves, or maybe even deep graves, or maybe being dumped in the ocean. Because ultimately, there are limits to how much people will put up with from bullies. And there are many forms of nasty, terrible bullies. But if you're going to go around victimizing people in a free world, you're probably not going to last long. So that's the thing. Hitler and Stalin, like the Pol Pot cooking show, you know? Yeah, the Jim Jones power hour. Listen, Jim Jones, in a way, fed off of the tyranny and created his own tyranny. In a world that is free, I don't think cults do that well with being, you know, violent. I'm not saying there won't be cults, but I don't think the cults would end up being as terrible, because in a free world, these things, these cults, these religions wouldn't have lawyers, for example, who could use the cops against you. It's like, it's a terrible situation. People try to leave the Church of Scientology, and in some cases, it's like the legal system works against them. It's ridiculous. So no, in a free world, you would have nuts like Adolf Hitler, and there would be a late night show, maybe. I think he would end up dying in the streets, but maybe there'd be a late night show called the Hitler Time, some of his guests would have been people like Pol Pot or Joseph Stalin, and they could talk their nasty shit for an hour or two and have people call in. Holy fuck. This would be a funny show. And people would call in and just, hey, Hitler, how's it going? You know, how's your dog? But I would much prefer Hitler and his friends on TV at 1 a.m. to what they actually did. That's a way, if you're going to like measure things, like say, what would I prefer? Would I prefer Hitler killing, you know, tell, you know, either killing people himself or worse, or yeah, way worse, getting lots of people to kill lots of people, or have him on TV at 1 a.m. spouting bullshit that really is inconsequential and never does anything except for maybe entertain some potheads and people doing shrooms and people doing, you know, drinking beers and eating pizza. If that's the worst case scenario in a free world, I think that's way preferable. And this is what people never get about free speech. I forget I think there was a Supreme Court justice or a great legal thinker, and I'm not going to look up the name because in the internet age, everyone does that, so I'm just going to leave it out there. But I recall it was either a Supreme Court justice or a great legal theorist who said something to the effect that the Constitution was not a suicide pact. And I used to think, I don't know, I pondered that statement. The Constitution is not a suicide pact, but if you actually think about it, and so, you know, this is kind of where Dr. Freckles' Global Tontine Club comes from. Like, DFGTC is my satire about social contracts and things like constitutions. But when you think about it, it really is a suicide pact. It is by design. You can't get out of it. These are documents of control. You are not sovereign under the Constitution at this point. You are not. If you think you are, you're really not getting it. I mean, you could make the argument, like, let's imagine we could go backwards in time and have the constitutional government of 1800. I mean, maybe things would be better, but you can't do that. It's like saying, can we take our crappy IKEA bed and stick it in a machine and roll back the dial and suddenly it works again? Yeah, if you could reverse entropy, if you had a massive energy scheme device that allowed you to reverse entropy at zero cost, or at least a very low cost, then I suppose you could do that, but that's not real, that's not the real world. Okay. That is not the real world. So yeah, that's a bit of a that was a bit of a ranty bypass there. Yeah. So free speech is scary to people, and it shouldn't be. It should be just the opposite. But yeah, there's gonna be speech that's gonna be scary, and in those cases where actual people are not just being videotaped victimized, but they're actually just being victimized, I believe in a free world, you would have huge consequences. And it would be quite terrible, and you would never ever get past a certain point, okay? But it's still scary to people. But as far as suicide pacts go, here's the deal. The Constitution is a suicide pact at this point. You are committed to legal interpretation that has turned the thing into a crappy piece of IKEA furniture. It is a suicide pact. They own you. According to them, they own you. That you have, look at Washington State. They voted to legalize marijuana, right? In 2012, legal marijuana. To this day, the marijuana industry is locked out of the banking system. Okay? So in what way were we sovereign to choose something? In what way did that happen? Okay? I used to be a libertarian. So in 2012, I voted to legalize marijuana for reasons that are probably obvious, but that's a separate topic as well. But at this point, you would expect in a rational world with all the really shitty taxes they have to pay that they would be able to use the banking system. Nope. So if you think you're sovereign under the Constitution, you're a fool. And if you think there's a magic reverse entropy device that will allow you to go back to 1800, you're a fool. That's not going to happen. Tyrannies don't reverse themselves. Tyrannies collapse. Empires don't reverse themselves. They don't go back to the beautiful days when Genghis Khan was a really nice guy. They just tend to just collapse. That's what happens. I know you want to believe different. You want to say, well, this time it'll be different, but no. Tyrannies collapse. And so, as far as I'm concerned, free speech should be as wide open as possible. As long as you're simply, I draw the line at either depicting harm, personally. I draw the line at depicting harm, or worse, videotaping real harm and not for journalistic purposes. And that's another thing too. If you're a journalist and you're simply, out there taking pictures of a war zone, that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about harming people for the purpose of entertainment, harming people for the purpose of feeding some evil desire. That is wrong. That's evil. And so for me, I draw the line there. If you're actually doing stuff like that, you're depicting harm as a good thing, or you're actually really harming people to create art, yeah. I don't even care if they volunteer. I think you're a scumbag. But if all you're doing is being an asshole, welcome to the human race, because most of you are assholes, and I'm offended all the time by most of the shit that comes out of your mouths. Okay? I have a crazy idea, but I'm certain that there's someone out there that's going to get really offended. I have this dream of a gay pride parade. Where there's a dress code, and where the people where you're only allowed to wear either a nice, properly fitting tuxedo or a really elegant, properly fitting dress, and maybe, circa the 1920s, okay? And so everyone's really elegant, and they're not, swinging their genitalia everywhere, and you can't see their hairy armpits, and they're not just dressed like a bunch of scoundrels and hoodlums. But they're actually really elegant walking down the street in tuxedos and fine evening gowns. Now, I know I probably offended a lot of poofs and power bottoms and stiff eddies and all the other people out there who would be offended. Fuck you, I don't care. I don't hate you because you're gay. I'm also not going to worship you because you're gay. I don't hate you because you're gay, okay? I am a Christian. I am not God. It is not my job to judge. I do not hate you because you're gay, but I also don't worship your ass because you're gay. I don't give a fuck. But if you're going to go do a parade, if we're going to talk about offending people, I would be much less offended if you dressed in fine evening gowns and tuxedos. Now, I know that would be expensive, but I'm fairly convinced your parades get funded by organizations that have money. So yeah, I think it could be done, and I'll even go a step further. I think there are members of your community that would donate to that. Okay, versus shit that would probably be not appropriate for children to see. Now that being said, I believe in free speech. So if you want to, in your community, have some shitty ass, either gay or heterosexual or weird parade where people are swinging their genitalia around, fucking, you know, power to you. Go do that. I will probably not be there that day. I'll probably, and if I ever do have kids, which is incredibly unlikely at this point, I probably won't take my kids there. But if you want to do that, hell, man, power to you. I'd prefer the tuxedos and the evening gowns. And if you did that, I'd probably come and wear a tuxedo. Although people would be pissed because now somehow I've co-opted the gay pride thing. And maybe that's my evil agenda, right? Yeah, I have an evil agenda. So I get offended all the time. I get offended by so much bullshit in Seattle. For a person like me that believes in liberty and dignity, I get offended to the point of conniption. My last day on the last contract, where that H-1B visa Chinese dude basically lit me up about total bullshit, and he was the guy who was touching me at work, like weird touching, that I actually spoke to my project manager about. Yeah, that last day at that contract a few months ago in Seattle for the local airline, and that's as much as I'll say, I also retorted. I responded. I spoke my mind. And you know what? That might, and like talking to that Amazon recruiter a month ago, that might blacklist me. I might be the white devil now. In fact, I have to look up what that is in Chinese, like the symbols, because that might be in the system somewhere in China. There's a code name next to my name for all the Chinese, you know, software remora recruiting companies / consulting companies that attach themselves to Amazon, Google, and Microsoft. There might be a notation that says white devil. And you know, if that's just another example of me committing career suicide and having a terrible life, well, fine. But it's still my fucking choice. And the outcomes are still mine. The consequences are still for me. You know, I just won't give in to the tyranny. And people think the tyranny is about some dude at the top. That's the theater. I think you're confused. You know, when people think the tyranny is what you see on TV, you have to remember what's once been said. You know, the revolution will not be televised. And guess what? The TV theater is not where the power is. You want to know where the power is? Think about the things you cannot criticize. I think Voltaire said something like that, but... And I know I've used that quote before, but yeah, think about who you cannot criticize, and that is where the power is. Well, I'm not gonna keep my mouth shut. I'm not gonna say I'm okay. For example, H-1B visa, which is a very crony thing, you know. And yeah, I don't see a contradiction. I'm an anarchist. I don't want any corporate welfare. That includes bullshit that basically leads to stuff like this. But that being said, I'd prefer a free world where I could go to Beijing just as easily and look for work as someone who could come here. That world does not currently exist. What we are importing here are people who really do believe in tyranny and people who totally support that fucking social tracking bullshit. And actually, we're importing a lot of racists, though, by the way. If you've never had a conversation with a Chinese software engineer from China, or an Indian software engineer from India, There's a fairly good chance that they'll tell you what neighborhoods you don't want to live in Seattle, and you'll find out how fucking racist they are pretty fucking fast. So yeah, I don't like it because these are not supporters of free speech. These are people who would just as soon beat you with rods until you obey. Well, so sorry. And really, I'm just really, really sorry, but no. Am I passionate about free speech? Well, I'm simply trying to be passionate about keeping the fragments of dignity I still have left. I suppose, it's a lot like that poem about, do not go gently into that good night. I am not going very gently into that good night, but why would anyone that has any dignity at all? It's one of the things that you have to ponder. For example, think about let's I'm going to be Christian for a second, but you don't have to listen. If you don't like Christians, you can turn the thing off. Fuck you. Especially the French, any French bulldog listening out there right now. Beans, if you're listening, because you're a demon and you don't like Christians, you can turn off, you can I don't know. You're not properly formed, but you can try to use your paw to turn it off. Hitting keys will usually pause beans, so just hit any key and you'll pause the playback. Excuse me. You'll pause the playback. But yeah, ask yourself this question: did Jesus Christ go gently into that good night? And really, you have to think about that. That's a trick question. I think he was a gentle, he was, he was the Son of God, and he was God, and he is God, but he was man, and I think as a God-made man, he was incredibly gentle. God was, Jesus was a gentle person. He didn't go out of his way ever to harm people, but at the same time, he wasn't a pushover. So here's this really gentle guy who's not a pushover, and he reaches, and part of his message. And part of the message of the Gospels is that he is willing to be righteous, knowing that in an evil world, there really is only one outcome. For, and I'm not saying I'm, by the way, I am not, oh my God, comparing myself to Jesus Christ. That is not the point of this. But, he did not go gently into that good night. When you think about his crucifixion, that's a giant symbol. That's a symbol so powerful it echoes through the ages. So, no, he did not go gently into that good night, and none of us should. I'm not saying be an asshole. I would prefer if people offended each other less, or at least let me put it this way. I would prefer if people were more conscientious. I would prefer if others were more conscientious towards me, and yeah, I think I could be more conscientious towards others. But if you have to be in my demographic in Seattle as a software engineer, you're going to be an outsider in a lot of cases, even around the quote unquote white people, because the white people that are here now, like I said, there's a time traveler, John Teeter, Mandela effect bullshit. Somebody went back to 1992 or 93 and they stole rock and roll or something. They stole the heart or something. They really did do something because Seattle has become an incredibly douchey fucking place. I mean, I've said this before, and you're going to think this is an exaggeration, but it is the truth. I was in a really dark place a year ago, and before I moved back here, and it was a really dark place in Indianapolis, and it was like it was between drowning myself in the White River in Indianapolis or moving back to Seattle, and it was a really tough fucking choice. It was tough. I'm glad I chose to come here, but I now know why it was a really tough choice. At this particular moment, staring at possible homelessness. Yeah, homeless in Seattle is not, that's not a movie. Single, what was that movie? Oh gosh, it's not Single in Seattle, but Sleepless in Seattle. Homeless in Seattle is not Tom Hanks in West Seattle canoeing to work. Homeless in Seattle is Hobbes. It's is life is brutal, nasty, and short. you know, it's pretty bad. And yeah, I was out on the bus today and I was going over I-5 and looking at one of the many communities, and it's horrible. And what's happening is horrible. And no one's going to tell me, well, damn, they're all losers. No, there are people amongst the homeless, yeah, who you could make a legitimate argument they deserve to be there. But in my view, most of these people are essentially one of the outcomes of an incredibly broken system. And yet we mock them and we pretend they're not there. We treat them like shit. It's not good karma if you're a Buddhist, and if you're a Christian, it's really a shitty attitude. So I get offended by Seattle a lot. And I have to struggle sometimes to find things I still give a shit about here. The whole cult, and it is a cult of in Seattle, there is this cult, since we're talking about things that offend Dan. There is a cult in Seattle around home ownership as an investment scheme, and it is cruel. I've said this before. You need food, you need water, you need shelter. If you turn any one of those things into investment scheme, listen, as an anarchist in a free world, if you wanted to buy up a bunch of food and try to starve people, I don't think you'd live long. I mean, I don't think you'd ever get there. Like, essentially, like, think about Mr. Burns, okay? Mr. Burns in a free world, he might exist in Antarctica. These people might exist on the fringe of human communities, okay? So there might be a community in Antarctica in a free world where there's a Mr. Burns type who controls the food. But Mr. Burns isn't going to live long there either if he's a total ass. That's the point. In a free world, these total asses never get so big. But one of the things that's really gross about Seattle is this whole cult around property ownership and property value schemes. And nobody gets that that would be as bad if you did that to food or water. If you treated food or water the way that people in Seattle treat housing, I mean, but the thing is, I don't even know if they'd wake up to that in time. Like, I really don't. I just think that they would go, like, holy shit, I just bought into the food derivative product, they bundled the food into complex financials, and look at our stock market value, and there's people starving around them. Well, there are people freezing to death in the wintertime, and it's not just in Chicago. Yeah, Seattle doesn't get so cold, thing freezes. But if you've actually ever done any camping or you know the outdoors, you don't have to have freezing temperatures to basically die of hypothermia. So there are people whose lives are shortened. There are people who are getting sick. There are people dying in the streets, and they're not all losers and scumbags and people that we should just throw away. And yet, there's this cult in Seattle, and you can listen to it, and you go to seminars, and it's filled with a lot of liberal douches, and they must rationalize the fuck out of it, and it's great. It must be great for the people that own these homes, but for the homeless people or the people who are barely hanging on, it's a fucking nightmare. And I gotta say, I think this is one of the reasons why H-1B visa exists, because you can import a lot of people who are used to the nightmare. They're used to, listen, in China, in India, they're used to this shit. Rivers covered in foam from toxic shit that looks like some weird ice, but it's not because it's 100 degrees out. Yeah, in India, they're used to this toxic shit. In China, they're used to breathing in coal dust and being watched all the time. And if they're not the right kind of religion, or if they're Falun Gong, for example, and I hope I said that right, well, gee, you have a healthy diet. We'll just take your liver. You know, while you're a prisoner here, we're going to put you in an operating room and we'll carve out some organs. H-1B visa makes a lot of sense if you want to reinforce a culture of tyranny. It makes tons of sense. And this is something people don't fucking get. It was like Trump. Oh my God. Trump said something where he was going to increase H-1B visa. And like I said, I don't vote anymore. I don't believe in this bullshit. But there are a lot of people who voted for Trump thinking that he would stand up for them. H-1B visa imports tyranny. H-1B visa imports people who have zero understanding of actual human liberty. And they are totally okay with all kinds of really gross shit. So yeah, if you want to keep the property railroad scheme going of property madness in Seattle, where people fuck their neighbor into homelessness so that they can have a home that's really worth $100,000, but they can pretend it's worth $600,000, yeah, keep doing that shit, Seattle. And you will offend the fuck out of me. And if you give speeches about it or have a seminar, it'll offend the fuck out of me. But you know what? I will still, I think as Voltaire once said, defend your right to say it. To my death. I don't agree with it. I think it's evil fucking cocksucker shit. If you're one of these people that's involved in a property scheme and you've made a lot of funny money, but if you've made a lot of money, fuck you. You've burned a lot of lives, fuck you. But if you want to go around giving seminars, I won't go, but I don't think anyone has a right to stop you. If people want to protest you, also free speech, they should feel free. But in Seattle, most of the cult believes your bullshit, so you're not going to get any protesters. Listen, there's two things true about liberal douches in Seattle. There are very few wars now they hate, and they love the property scheme. Okay, they will not protest against a war. You might get 10 or 15 people, okay? But you will not get people in the street. In the liberal, blue, douchey Seattle, you will not get people in the street to protest the bullshit in Syria or the bullshit in Yemen or the bullshit that happened in Libya. Oh my God, most of these fucks voted for Hillary, even though she basically took a country that, yeah, wasn't perfect. Gaddafi wasn't perfect. Guess what? They took a country that wasn't perfect and turned it into a hellish shithole. So yeah, there are two things you won't get Seattle douchey liberals to protest about. They will never get upset about the property schemes, and they will never get upset about a modern war. And why? Because both of those things make them money. The third thing, issues of free speech. Because, man, they make a lot of money off the national security state. So there's a lot of things that offend me. And there's a big absence of proper protest around issues that I think are important, but this is free speech. If I could live in a free world, I don't care how offended I would get, because at least I could walk away. At least I'd have other real choices. And at least I wouldn't be constantly henpecked to death by my state, by the government every fucking day. Ugh. But free speech is scary for so many people. I mean, in their minds, like in Canada now, I think, it's illegal for me to say him or her. And I think to myself, you know, there's this book I like by Martin Buber called I and Thou. And I think maybe I should just say thou now, to say thou, do thou, doth thou wish that, doth thou wish. I may have just created something for the anti-speech people. They could have the doth thou movement, because thou doesn't mean he or she. So you could say, doth thou wish this or doth thou wish that? And we could all sound like Quakers or fucking shit. And what the fuck? Get over yourself. I get offended. People say things that are mean to me. Okay. One of my nicknames in Korea was Terrain Feature, because when we went to gunnery once, we shaved our heads and I had these weird ridges on the top of my head. Well, yeah, it really sucks to be made fun of, but you got to get over yourself. It's reality. It happens. People will say scary things. People will say terrible, mean things sometimes. And as long as they're not harming you physically, and as long as you can walk away, then you're going to be okay. And yeah, there are lines, but the problem is, the government doesn't help you with those lines. Listen, there's lots of evidence that our own government facilitates a lot of this pedophilia bullshit. And as a matter of public record, we know that with the, I think it was, you know, Danny Seville, but the Seville guy in the UK. Listen, there are upper middle class people in the UK involved in pedophile schemes, matter of public record. And there's reason to believe that MI5 or MI6 or both, ran some fucking interference, or at least some group within those organizations. So you know what? If you care about issues involving the abuse of children, you should prefer to live in a free world and actually have people given their speeches, because they're going to let you know who they are. You know, in that kind of world, it's going to be easier to find out who the predators are. in this world, and this is the thing that people don't get about prohibition. Prohibition makes evil people smarter. I'm sorry, if you don't get this, you're really fucking stupid. But prohibition for the evil mind is like the university. It's like I used to hear prisoners call, I used to hear, you know, criminals say that going to prison was like going to college. But actually, for criminals, it kind of is. I mean, they get a little bit of time off. They don't have to worry about going to a job. Maybe they're in a slave camp making wallets or something, but still, as crappy as it is, they're sharing ideas, they're connecting with people, they're having seminars, they're exchanging ideas. So in some sense, yeah, prison has become a college for people, for some people. It's also a terrible place. Wish that the prisons didn't exist because they're mostly terrible as far as outcomes go. But yeah, they're college for a lot of very evil people. And prohibition is like graduate school. It is like postgraduate. You know, you're basically perfecting. You're becoming a great artist in the field of fucking with people. That is the outcome of prohibition. If you lock down on free speech will go underground and it will get uglier. That's what will happen. You're not going to have fewer videos of people depicting horrible violence. You're going to have more, and they will be more difficult to control. That is the outcome of prohibition. That is the outcome of tyranny. This is something people don't get. They don't get quite yet. Maybe they won't. Maybe they never will. I mean, maybe it will take, in the United States of America, a terrible, terrible prison state type reality for people to get it. I, for one, don't think that's likely. I think if we're lucky, we'll go through something like a Soviet-style collapse. But our own government has become so fouled and so incompetent that I think that it's just as likely it simply collapses. And I kind of hope it does. But if it becomes a super tyranny, yeah, maybe people will wake up, but it'll be too late. I mean, you're going to be on the, for most people, they're going to be in line waiting to be chipped when they finally get it. And then, you know, I hate to break it to you, but when you're in line to be chipped, it's probably almost too late. If at that point you want to throw your wooden shoe into the machine, go ahead. But, and that's a reference to where sabotage come from, you know, sabo, the wooden shoe. Anyways, if at that point you want to throw your wooden shoe and sabotage, if you want to try that, go ahead. But in my view, that's probably going to be too late. That you're going to be stuck in a reality where, best case, you'll become awake like Robert Duvall in THX 1138, and you'll, you know, get tired of talking to you'll get tired of talking about your troubles to kiosk Jesus. They had, you know, in the THX 1138, they have a kiosk. That's basically Jesus. It's like you go into a booth and you can talk to Jesus about your troubles. It's not actually Jesus. It's, you know, the future digital Jesus. But maybe you'll wake up like Robert Duvall, you know, and stop taking your pills. And maybe you will, but it's going to be too late in an aggregate sense. Society will have failed at that point. I don't think there's the juice. I think that, you know, James Howard Kunstler is probably about the only person in this whole country right now that gets it. I mean, there's more than him, but there's a group of people like him, okay? I think he gets it. I think there are people like him that get it. And but yeah, maybe there is some super energy device that will allow them to keep this bullshit going. I don't think it's likely. Maybe there is. But if that's the case, the future is quite terrible. You know, best case, it's a really deformed utopia, and it's hyperconformist. And that's the thing about hyperconformity. It inevitably leads to something like the desexualized THX 1138 slave. You know, we all have shaved heads, and we'll all have basically no sexual features. And if you're a woman and your boobs are too big, they'll probably make you cut them off. I mean, in that kind of future, they want everyone to look the same and be the same. That's what hyperconformity is. That's what people want in Seattle. They don't want differences. They don't want diversity. They want a particular group or type of reality to come into existence and for all others to be pushed out. So yeah, that's kind of terrible. And in that world, if you wake up to free speech waiting to be chipped, then I'm sorry. I suppose if I had superpowers, I would send you, as I've said in the past, I would send you the tiniest little, you know, gnome or fairy riding the tiniest little unicorn, playing the tiniest little violin. And that's how I would feel, because you fucked up. You had lots of choices at times where you could have made a different choice. It's kind of like being anti-war. The stupidest time to be anti-war is when the nuclear missiles are flying. The second stupidest time is a few weeks before. When you have any sense that a war is coming, like in 2014, when we funded a coup to topple the government in the Ukraine, that was fucking stupid, okay? That was incredibly belligerent bullshit when we toppled the government in Kiev. So in 2014, I noticed that this hate Russia bullshit was coming back into vogue. And I actually tried to organize a protest downtown in Westlake, March 2014. I got 5 people to show up. 5 people cared whether or not their friends or families would be radioactive dust. So yeah, the time to protest war is not 5 minutes before you're about to become radioactive dust. I hate to break it to you, but it's really the stupidest fucking time to be anti-war. You probably should be anti-war when there's still a chance, as tiny as it is, to actually have an effect. And then don't stop until the war bullshit stops. That's how you are anti-war. But that doesn't exist. In Seattle, So, yeah, I think I've spoken about free speech enough, and I've certainly beaten up on Seattle. For now, I'm stuck here, and you know what? I'm going to say something. I don't want to die. I'm not going to commit suicide, but I'll likely die here because I don't see how I'm going to get the resources together to do much than live in the streets. So maybe I'll linger for 10 or 20 years as a street person, and if that's the case, whatever, you know. Nobody owes anybody anything. Life doesn't owe you something. The Lord in heaven gave us all gifts, so he doesn't owe us anything either. It doesn't mean life is easy, and it doesn't mean life is perfect, and sometimes it's going to really suck. And not everybody is going to win first place. I know that's sad, but that's reality. Some of us are just going to end up being special effects in the universal teleplay called existence. We have to be okay with these things. We should try to make the pain as little as possible. We should probably do the best we can to help each other along the way. But, you know, in my ideal utopia, a free society, there's still going to be bad things that will happen. It's just that we won't have governments engineering society to make sure that only bad things happen. But yeah, that's enough on free speech. I hope you're having a great Friday night. Actually, no, it's Saturday morning now. Holy fuck. It's 1:17 a.m. Holy crap, this is a long-ass little Saigon report. But at least I stayed to one basic topic, free speech. Listen, you need to support it. Don't be a dope.